Podcast, the Nevermore Podcast, is a production of the Three Little Sisters. The Three Little Sisters is an independent publisher focused on titles from around the globe. This month in the publishing house, we have some really big titles coming out that we're so excited about. The Seed of Yggdrasil is flying off our shelves. We've got plenty of copies, so please don't hold back. Although, please remember that on November 20th, we're slowing down a bit. If you want to place an order and get it there for Christmas, you must do it by November 20th. That is November 20th. Any order past that, we can't guarantee delivery times as Amazon starts slowing down just before the Christmas season because everybody's ordering all of their Christmas presents. We have The Bright One coming out in December, as well as the must-anticipated Morningfell. We have Bone Jar out, Masters of Macabre out, and we're also having Rainbow Milestones come out. So there's a lot of titles coming out. Make sure you step by our new shop, which is where you can find all of our books at shop.thethreelittlesisters.com, and you'll see all of our books and titles there. And if you're looking for information on what we're planning in the near future, all of our blog articles, things that we're planning, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, you can check out our main site at thethreelittlesisters.com. That's thethreelittlesisters.com. So today on the podcast, we're going to dive into the much anticipated Morningfell. And I have on the program today our executive coordinator, TL, and our creative director, Sarah, who is the co-author of Morningfell. So, hello! So we're going to talk about how Morningfell sort of came into being. And Sheila did a lot of work on the cover and helped us a lot with editing. And so she's quite familiar with the title. And the art was just amazing to watch as it came into production. And we're going to thank that special artist featuring from Australia in this podcast. So Morningfell sort of came out of the blue. I don't really even know exactly how the idea started, but I think Sarah and I were just talking about how nice it would be to have some like heathen-esque kids books, and kind of had this idea of like, what would happen if two kids just ended up in a world full of gods? And that's sort of where the idea came from. I think it's been like a really interesting journey to write with someone who I work with every day and who is my best friend and my sister, like Shiel is. This is a real family here and the three of us are very close. And so it was really cool to see like our personalities sort of come out in this and how we were finishing each other's sentences as we kind of wrote the manuscript together. And there's a lot of jumping off back and forth. So, you know, I don't know if you want to chime in and whatever, but I mean, like for me, Morningfell was just an amazing sort of like road to watch both of us sort of develop a world that was going to be strange. Yeah,
it was surreal because thinking back to what it was supposed to be at the beginning, where, you know, I'm one of those very organized writers. I have to have an outline. I have to have a character sheet, and I have to know, you know, I'm like, and just so seeing where it went from where we had everything planned out to what it became, it was like Morningfell just kind of took on a life of its own. And at one point we just kind of sat back and we're like, screw it, we're just gonna enjoy the ride.
Exactly. Yeah. I think it even started out right, like, because Shield was there during this conversation too. It started out with just an idea of having like a sort of field guide to like Norse type spirits. That's where we were going with this. It wasn't even supposed to be like a story. It was just supposed to be crazy. It was just supposed to be this collaboration of like, well, what's an elf like and what's a this like? And that's how it sort of the idea sprang. But then, like you said, it just sort of became an entity all on its own.
Morningfell essentially just said, sit down, shut up, and write the story. We're like, okay.
Right. And I think that's happening too with the three of us and writing the bones. Like, that is definitely not just us in there. And maybe this is leaning, you know, in a sort of somewhat uncomfortable conversation.
Metaphysical.
Yeah. Well, I mean, at least sort of to like, exactly. Like, a lot of people are going to maybe perceive us as being weird or crazy or whatever, but that's fine. But it does feel like there is an aspect to writing where you kind of get taken away by the story itself. And I kind of feel like, maybe if others, I don't know how people perceive the gods, but I kind of feel like the gods had their hands in these and really directed the story and directed the manuscript as to where they wanted to go. And they were quite persistent about who was going to be in there and who wasn't. Yeah. We changed a lot of many times going through our heads of like which gods we wanted to make sure were in there and which ones we weren't. And being very careful to pay homage to them, but also change them so that they would be something modern and new and not so, stuck to their Eddic type mythology.
Yeah, it's definitely, there's a lot of creative liberties taken, but I mean, that's, you know, I think that's to be expected. I think everybody knows the traditional stories and the traditional, you know, viewpoints of the gods, but it's like, okay, but what if we don't? Like, what if we change them a little bit? What if we do this instead of this? And I think it's just, you know, you're always going to have those creative liberties, and I think it's just very interesting to see different authors take on those liberties and see how they view the gods and how they view just the various mythological creatures.
Exactly. Like, I think it's really cool to take a twist on it and change it. So when we were writing Morgefell, we really wanted it to have illustrations. And like we said, initially, it was not supposed to be just a story. And we tried a few different illustrators and just nothing ever panned out. And then one of our authors, Warwick, said, oh, I know this woman. She does a lot of sketch work. I think maybe you guys should, you know, connect. And that's how we got connected to Patsy. Patsy is a very well-known artist in Australia. She's actually drawn for a lot of famous productions. And so I was really honored to kind of get her name and start talking with her. And it just really cemented for her that this was something she was supposed to do. And it just seems like this story was built for her. And that she was just brought here to illustrate it, because every single illustration in it really added something to the gods. And she really captured them in a way that I just am in love with how detailed the illustrations are and how wonderfully she captured each one of them.
Every new picture that I saw, I was just like, oh my goodness. Like, I mean, they are all beautiful. She just captures everything. Just it's absolutely amazing.
As an artist myself and an illustrator myself, I'm so glad that I was able to pass that project on to her, because it was meant for her. Absolutely meant for her.
Yeah, and I think I passed along her review, which I was just looking through my email to find out or recall what she said. But when initially we spoke about it, she didn't really know much about it. And she was just sort of drawing off the cuff. Like, she didn't really know what our plans were or any. She hadn't even read the manuscript. And she just started sketching some ideas of the lists we had given her. And the first sketch she turned in was Scotty. And at that moment, I think we all knew that, like, this is the artist. Like,
oh, yeah.
We have to, I don't care what it takes, we have to get this woman to do it. And so we sent her the manuscript, and there was like a 4-week period where I didn't hear from her. And so I started getting a little nervous, because I'm like, oh no, maybe she's changed her mind. And it was because she was reading it. Yeah. And she came back with this feedback, and I can't remember off the top of my head. So I was looking through the email, but I can't find it. But she was very glowing about what she said about it. And the one thing that sticks out in my mind is that she said she couldn't tell which one of us was writing it.
Mm-hmm.
And that was the biggest compliment. The same thing happened with me and Sheila in Bone Jar. Like, when the three of us are writing, it's hard to tell which one of us is writing, because it seems to be like we kind of merge mm-hmm. into each other and feed off of each other. And I think that's a really good a good situation when you're collaboratively writing, where you're not too divergent in your thoughts, that one's following the other one. I mean, I remember all the writing sessions that you and I had with Sheila there present, and her going like, yeah, this is all like, you're connecting pieces even when you're not there together.
Right.
You're just following each other, and you're following, like, going down the road, seeing what mm-hmm. kind of comes out. And so I really did appreciate her thoughts on that, and that she felt so in love with the story, and she just couldn't put it down. And I really, you know, appreciated her thoughts on it. And it was really nice to know that somebody really cared about it as much as we did.
Absolutely.
So, you know, if you grab a copy of this novel, you're going to see her gorgeous illustrations. And she even created one extra one that we're going to be offering in a unique poster. It's a one-time created sketch of the character in our novel named Book. And it is a beautiful illustration. And I'm so pleased that Patsy did all this work for us. And she's really looking forward to maybe for sometime in the future doing a second book with us, because she's just so in love with the story that she just really wants to do more. Like, she really loved doing these sketches. So I think when people see them, they'll kind of get the point. So in Morayfell, the two children that we have sort of going through the novel are, you know, typical, you know, just straight up kids named Dagny and Torben. And they really had no plans of what was about to befall them until they meet a curious character named Toad. Sarah was mostly writing for Toad's dialogue, and I have to say that you really kind of captured how
I love Toad.
Yeah, he's a really fun character who's just sort of a big mess. And, you know, he tries really hard. He really does. But, you know, he really kind of fails a lot. And he really doesn't like
best.
He's doing his best. He really, him and Dagny didn't get along too well. And there's many times in the story where they really hate each other. And so when we were writing this together, I often thought about how I would feel about, you know, a little sister or a little brother constantly antagonizing me. Mm. And that's how I kind of perceive Toad. He's like that little annoying little brother. It's just like following you around.
And you know who he reminds me of? He reminds me of Rowan Atkinson as Toby the Devil. That's who he reminds me of. Have you ever seen that skit from Rowan Atkinson where he's the devil and everybody's come to hell? And he's like, oh, you were so wrong, Christians. The Jews had it right.
Yeah.
That sketch. That's what Toad reminds me of, is that sketch from Rowan Atkinson.
Yeah. you know, yeah, I agree with you. He kind of does remind me. And Toad, we don't know really a lot about him, but we know that his origins are somewhat mystical. In fact, he might have been even sent there by the Norns themselves. And Toad has sort of a past all along to his own that we don't really know much about. Maybe one day we'll understand where he comes from. But he comes from that collective ether of you know, fairies. But he's not quite a fairy, and he's not quite a toad. He's somewhere in between. And, you know, I really loved his character, and he was really hilarious. Dagny kind of reminds me of myself in a lot of ways. She's very rough and tumble, not a typical girly girl. She really wants life to live to its fullest, and she has no qualms about living an adventure. And I wrote most of Dagny. Sarah did write some of hers as well. But Sarah took on the role of Torben. And can you tell us a little bit about Torben and what kind of inspired him?
So Torben, a lot of his personality was inspired by my daughter. Very, you know, up for adventure, but very cautious about it. He's not the kind who's going to go out and hunt for it. But if it comes to him, he's going to be like, yeah, okay, why not? He's the very logical one. He's not going to be the one that's very, you know, mystically minded. He's very logical. Everything has a reason. Let's just look at this from a different perspective. And that's very much how my kid is. So it was very interesting to be able to put that personality into different situations.
I kind of like Torben's personality a lot, and he's kind of the perfect balance for the wild and craziness of Dagny.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Dagny likes to get him in a lot of trouble, but he is really the calm voice of reason, who's like, well, maybe we should try a different way or not be this crazy. And so I really liked his personality throughout the book. And I really liked the way that both of us kind of took turns writing the different characters and the different classes of characters. Sarah pretty much took on the entire section of the trolls, and all the trolls are very much inspired by her. I took on a lot of the elves, and we kind of went back and forth on like writing different characters, and both of us kind of laid in problems that we faced as kids and kind of laid them in the book in a way that you can't tell that really what you're getting actually is a life lesson. There's plenty of those the book. Yeah, and a lot of people pick up on them, but it's not lecturing. So if you're trying to get your kid to kind of maybe stop bullying someone or to appreciate someone's differences, you know, this book really does give you a way to do that. It addresses things in a way that I think children can really truly understand and really come to terms with differences in their life. We also have one of my favorite characters, which is our squirrel. And the squirrel is pretty much the storyteller throughout the entire novel. And of course, he has some very interesting thoughts on what is going on, and also interjects a lot of his own perception on the story. So he was one of the more funny characters to write.
Yeah, I did enjoy him. He was...
I think the only struggle that you and I had was not going too dark, because we didn't want kids to get freaked out by the gods, and we didn't want them to be afraid of them. And so we kind of hid in a little bit of darkness here and there. But we did go a little bit dark in terms of like just on the edge of what you would think is slightly frightening, but not scaring people to death. Right. I mean, there is a whole character in here that is a ghost of a witch who was accidentally blown up by her own invention. And she is a very nice ghost, and she's not scary. And, you know, I don't think children will be terrified by anything that's in the novel at all.
No.
But it does deal with a lot of hard truths, especially on aspects of death and loss, friendship, and more. And so there's a lot of things that go on in More You Fell. So with that in mind, I think I'm going to read some of our wonderful novel here, and we're going to start with The Prelude. They say sometimes the beginning of things is often a place you would rather not know existed. Foreseeing the creation of a thing can make it lose its mystery somewhat. And that makes life rather dull, doesn't it? But this beginning is one that you need to understand. For understanding this one thing is to know what a book is not just an object jammed full of pages, but a living object as real as you or me. It began, of course, as everything does, at night. If you don't believe me, I say that all stories start at night. I can't help to convince you, but since I was there, I should know. There was also on that night a dragon who had just gotten a lollipop and was skipping down the road innocently while pondering the wonder of life. The beauty of this moment was juxtaposed with the oddness of the road on which the dragon found herself. Although this does not seem to relate to the story, it's something that proves that what is seemingly random may not be. Frankly, because I am the storyteller here, I have no problem telling you exactly what I want. On this night of all nights, a dragon, a lollipop, and three sisters cross paths in a slightly unfortunate but mostly fortunate crossroad. The unfortunate part is that this crossed in such a way that the dragon scarcely had time to leap out of the path of the three sisters. She remembered what her mother told her. Whenever you see three women at a crossroad, leap away, for they could be the sisters of fate, so you better hide your little dragon tail or else they might make you into a stew. Not wanting to be a stew, she took refuge in a sinkhole, which was the fortunate part. Just a day before, More You Fell Roadworks had cleared out some of the sewage, and so the dragon found herself safely landing on a soft pad of dirt, clinging onto her lollipop, and trying to quiet her breathing so as not to be detected. "What's all the fuss about?" said Past. "It's only a little problem." "The fuss is," said Present, "that the little problem, as you put it, is that this book doesn't get to where it's going. They will never meet, which means they will never be. You know what that means." "The world will yada yada blah blah blah," said Future. "Yes, we all know that, Present, but don't you think it's going to be a wee too bit far telling if it's alive? I mean, surely that is that really required? The last time we made an object feel alive, it never forgave us, and since then, honestly, it's been spending its miserable life pondering its purpose." While you can't help some objects, can you? It's not our fault that things in the universe don't see that even though their purpose is not clear. It does not imply they do not have a purpose, and frankly, being alive worked for other objects, didn't it? Present replied. As long as we give it the rules, sisters, it should be just fine. Pass finished with a big smile on her face. The dragon thought about peeking out, but decided it was not worth it. The thought of the dragon stew was terrifying, and she could picture herself floating next to the olives, and the sheer idea of it gave her dragon bones. And that is how we begin the story of Moraefell. So, one of the characters that we have in this novel is Ove, and she is a lusciously bubblegum pink dragon who is constantly walking around with a lollipop in her hand. And all she wants to do is really be nice to everybody. She has no ill will in her body. Ove is just a friendly little dragon who just wants nothing but goodness. And I think what inspired me to write her was like really the idea of being that somewhat sickeningly annoying, wonderful person that's just is full of optimism. And like Ove is definitely that. Like she is the optimistic person that's just in the novel.
They just wander around the chaos going, this is fine. No, this is great.
You mean like the person who's at 5 o'clock in the morning so happy and bubbly that you want to strangle them?
And she doesn't even need coffee for that. Like that's the crazy
part. That's scary.
The other character that I really fell in love with a lot when writing this was your version of Thor. Because I really thought he was the way I see him in the myths, and he really captured his really friendly, humanistic type character mm-hmm. that I think people sometimes don't see. And he really has an interesting part in this book. And he kind of helps two people, you know, get married. And Thor is a really, like, really cool guy in this novel, and I really appreciated him.
He's like the cool dude bro, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, he really, really is. He's the cool dude bro. But yeah, there's nothing about this book that I didn't like. I'm trying to find a passage that I could pull out that Sarah would want me to read. So I'm just, like, flipping through the book. I know, we'll do a game here. I'll just flip through and then you guys say stop. Ready? 1, 2, 3, flip.
And stop.
Okay. Woo! We've got from page 93, and this is when we are meeting the mermaid named Spring, who is not that bright, to be fair. The compass didn't have much to say as it jerked its needle one way and then the next, finally landing not on a compass point, but on the word after lunch. Ugh! This compass is the worst! I mean, all it knows how to do is point to lunch after supper and suppins. I don't understand it. I mean, why would my seaweed O's give out such a useless tool? Spring grumbled. Dagny and Torben just stared at this little conversation with little ability to comment. Because what does one say to a compass or a mermaid that is conversing with said compass? Stan just stood there with his arms crossed, tapping his foot impatiently, waiting for Spring to figure out what to do. Well, I guess we'll just have to fling it, Spring said, closing the compass and starting out down the path. My mom always told me, when your compass fails and you don't know what to do, just keep on walking and your way will become clear. Best case, we get it wrong. Worst case, we find our way or something like that. Off they went with Spring skipping down the pass with a joyful bounce. At least they could see the journey was going to be interesting. Stan just shrugged his shoulders and followed. What can you do? Sometimes the funny ones are the ones that are best to follow, even into certain death. And Spring was just that. She was the cute, friendly rabbit who is in league with the wolves. She was the kid in the fairy tales who takes the wrong path and accidentally falls into the sleeping nettles. You get my point. Spring is cute and funny, but all too trusting. And that can make the best companion or the one you remember when you fall off the cliff thinking to yourself, I really should have just stayed home. All the mermaids in the story were kind of written sort of to balance what Norse mythology and the Little Mermaid kind of indicated about mermaids. Like, they're kind of a mix between old school and new school.
Yeah, it was kind of a mix between mythology and folklore. You know, you have all the little folk tales like Little Mermaid and, you know, just some of the more fun ones. And it's like, you know, you have kind of a nice mixture of super powerful and deadly and then just kind of fun and bubbly.
Yeah. In fact, part of the tale going towards the underworld, the kids end up hanging out with this witch named Wilhelmina. And she has to take them through this weird forest to get all these keys to open a gate. And one of the things that they encounter is fairy tale witches from all of the famous fairy tales like Hansel and Gretel and Rapunzel. And all of them, of course, come out in full-on Disney musical fashion, and they have to sing, and they're very crazy. And the kids are just kind of standing there staring at them, like as if they've
lost their mind. Which Toad, by the way, is absolutely horrified by.
Yeah, exactly. because we really wanted to kind of make fun of how fairy tales are perceived and kind of make Moriefowl a fairy tale of itself. So it's like a fairy tale within a fairy tale. And, I kind of like that, appreciated that aspect of us, like kind of digging in to make fun of a little bit of Alice in Wonderland and Disney. And we kind of made fun of like old school mythologies and twisted them on their head. So we did do a lot of things like that. The other fairy character that I really fell in love with was Hel, because we really wanted to make her something unique. And so we gave her the unique role of being a YouTube influencer, because if anything, Hel's going to be, it's going to be the queen of YouTube. And yeah. And she does makeup tutorials, of course, because why wouldn't she?
come on.
And so
when you're half skeleton, you have to know how to apply your foundation correctly. I mean, geez.
Exactly. And so I think, she's a really fun character in the novel. And we kind of played around with the idea of what a zombie was, what the undead are. And in the novel, the undead actually work at the TSA. And so when you walk through to get through to Hel, you have to go through, of course, borders and customs and get your suitcases and luggage checked by the TSA. And, of course, the rules same apply in Hel. And, in fact, if you don't have Form 456-992-12-HHJ4 filled out in triplicate, you may not enter Hel. So, it's a very funny...
And that paperwork is very difficult. It takes 3 weeks for it to arrive.
Yeah, and so the characters in there are really funny. There's also an amusement park inside Hel, and it looks something out of, like, Monster High mixed with Disneyland. And that's a very wacky kind of land. We also have a very cool invention inside the novel called the Bubble Vader. And Bubble Vaders, of course, are big giant bubbles that you can blow up that take you up and down. So there's some really cool things in this book that we came up with all by ourselves. And I think it just makes it unique, and it makes the story funny. And there's a lot of funny moments and a lot of heartening moments. And I finally found that email so I can actually read it to people. So this is actually from the illustrator who read the novel. She says here... she found herself adding voices to each character as she enhanced her writing. I think that you're right about this, and the gods brought us together to illustrate something as wonderful as Moriefowl. I laughed, I cried, and when I closed the novel, I missed them. And I really think that I feel the same way about it. it's hard for authors to kind of feel so good about something they wrote, but this is one that I'm very proud of and feel that, you know, it's a really good novel, and I really hope that people give it a chance.
And this is the first children's book that I've ever written. There was a big learning curve, but I'm very